to the circle of evil.
Whoa, slow your roll, Shot Collar.
Goodbye.
But what, but...
Hardly's gone.
Oh, let go of my ear, Uncle
You'll
Ficus.
Not get doomed tonight, you skelly scooper.
It hurts a little, Uncle Ficus.
Join us next time for another astonishing Super Indian adventure.
Super Indian.
A Native Voices at the Autry production.
Thank you for tuning in to Rose City Native Radio. Going to add in our friend Nick Yellowhorse. Nick, what do you want to say to the people out there? Try that one more time.
I want to say thank you for listening. And, you know, I'm just really appreciative. It's been a really not great day for us today here in Portland. Everything seems to be going wrong. But, you know, coming into the radio station and being with y'all is always a great time. Mm-hmm. And I always enjoy it.
Yes, we always enjoy it. And we hope you enjoyed today's show. Again, if you knew John Talley or know anybody in the Native community who was friends with Jolly, please email us at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. Until next week, Indian Country, stay cool.
The program was produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. You can find more audio online at kboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Once a Braided River is a documentary film by Barbara Bernstein. The film tells the story of the Willamette River before it was transformed into a Superfund site. The documentary features community groups and activists working to replace the zone and explores their vision to reclaim this stretch of river as a place where people and wildlife can thrive. Again, that's Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves. From Marcus Lopez, I'm your host, Larry Smith.
As we currently reside inside of these colonial states of California, we also understand that this violence that is caused from these forced offset projects, from these carbon markets, we also hold a great responsibility to that as the fourth largest economy of the world, that this responsibility weighs heavy upon the people of California to really move us in a direction that's going to cause real climate solutions to move forward.
Today on American Indian Airwaves, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. We'll hear from Indigenous environmental defenders and their struggles to resist the false solutions in the carbon-based market in global capitalism while maintaining community and planetary health in a changing climate. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves.
You can hear when the moon shines bright, the lone blue air in the black of the night. You can hear the whisper in the valley. And you know when Kamakani blows to the Bahu drum, it's the warriors who are marching.
Today on American Indian Airwaves, we go to the United Nations for the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the 22nd session, which is held this year from April 17th to April 28th. This year's theme is Indigenous Peoples, Human Health, Planetary and Territorial Health, and Climate Change, a Rights-Based Approach. Today, we'll hear an exclusive panel held on April 20th of 2023 titled Indigenous People's Health and the Violence of False Solutions. The panel focuses on Indigenous peoples resisting land grabs driven by the extractive industries, resisting human rights violations, and Indigenous environmental defenders resisting false solutions known as carbon markets, cap and trade, emissions trading, carbon offsets, environmental and ecological services, and the rebranding of reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, also known as RED by its acronym, to nature-based solutions. The panel is sponsored and organized by the Indigenous Environmental Network. It's moderated by Tom Goldtooth, the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, and we'll hear in order from Tamara Gilbertson, Charlene Oliveira de Silva Hunakai, Thomas Joseph of the Hoopa Nation in Northern California, and we'll hear from Alberto Saldamando. And now, Indigenous Peoples' Health and the Violence of False Solutions. We begin with moderator Tom Goldtooth, executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network.
We are broadcasting this just to let you know. So welcome to this session sponsored and organized by the Indigenous Environmental Network. We are an international Indigenous Peoples organization. We've been coming to the permanent forum for many of the years, including the first couple years, and as well as participating in the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity, and many other UN bodies. And so we put together this presentation around a very important issue. Thank you for coming and responding to your interest in the title, Indigenous People's Health and the Violence of False Solutions. We feel that this is a very important discussion that in our observation, in participating in many Indigenous forums and meetings globally, but also here in the United States and Canada, what I have called in the belly of the beast of capitalism, We have observed and also have firsthand knowledge that many of our indigenous peoples from the community have not been given the full understanding of the complicated area of carbon markets, cap and trade, emissions trading, carbon offsets, environmental and ecological services, and now the rebranding of what I have seen, the rebranding of reducing emissions from forests, from deforestation and forest degradation called RED, into another terminology called nature-based solutions. So we've been very concerned about this, especially in looking at protection mechanisms to prevent human rights violation, land grabs, and whether or not a market system really actually reduces emissions at the scale that is required to meet a 1.5 Celsius goal. So as an indigenous organization, we've been involved with this issue for a number of years. We've collected data and research and reliable reports, but also looking at other climate fault solutions that are being negotiated, in fact, implemented around geoengineering technologies like carbon capture and storage or solar radiation management. Most of our presentation is going to focus on the carbon market system, but we have speakers here that will be looking at geoengineering as well. But our biggest concern in this week is the concerns that the continuation of business as usual with fossil fuel development continues this act of violence against our women, against our children, our families, our elders, not only in the North, but in the South. We have the continuation of the criminalization and the assassination of indigenous peoples who stand up to defend the rights of Mother Earth, the rights of Father Sky, to defend who are earth defenders, water defenders, air defenders. So it's a very important issue. So we have speakers here from different areas. My name is Tom Goetus. I am the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. So I'm very happy to introduce this panel. I'm going to proceed right now and continue to go forward here. Our first speaker here will be Tamara Gilbertson. She's our Climate Justice Program Coordinator with our Indigenous Environmental Network. So Tamara, if you can proceed.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you for the participants here in person and also for the participants who are joining us virtually. I want to thank everyone for being here today. Over the past week here at the 22nd United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, we've heard the following words: genocide, forced removal, land theft, colonialism, bloodshed, cultural erasure, environmental racism, violence, forced labor, global inequality, war, development, poverty, gender violence, pollution, health risks, cancer, deforestation, mining, extraction, missing and murdered Indigenous women and femmes, criminalization, death threats, assassination. These are just a few of the words of the most extreme atrocities possible humans can commit. They are the most extreme atrocities that Indigenous peoples are bearing and that continue to bear since colonialism began. And these acts are happening in a historical context, and they are happening now. We have heard throughout this week from many people gathered to give testimony how Indigenous peoples continue to endure these ongoing real and material impacts of colonial systems, fossil fuel regimes, and unjust economic development. And here are a few more words that will continue these atrocities that are packaged inside of an envelope to make them sound good, but they are not. Reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, red. Carbon markets, emissions trading systems. Article 6, carbon dioxide removals, carbon offsets, nature-based solutions, net zero, 1.5 degrees Celsius, carbon smart agriculture, 30 by 30. These programs are backed by the United Nations through the Paris Agreement and justified through various UN processes. Yet the fossil fuel industry continues to push for the expansion of carbon markets, and this is because the markets allow the fossil fuel industry to continue extraction. The inherent flaws of commodifying and financializing and exploiting Mother Earth are seen and backed by systems here at the United Nations. At the core of these mechanisms are a free pass, or a green light, or a way out for the fossil fuel and agribusiness industries to continue business as usual, as Tom Goldtooth has pointed out. And we know this to be true. We know that these systems don't work because for over 20 years, the flagship mitigation mechanisms to reduce emissions on a global level has been based on carbon trading systems. Yet, they have colossally failed. And we know this to be true because we are in grave danger and the threat of climate change is very real and is happening now. It is not only the climate that suffers, but the false solutions that are backed by the UN continue the atrocities of social and environmental violence that have real and material impacts on people all over the world, and especially born by Indigenous peoples. Indigenous peoples are environmental defenders and frontline recipients of escalating environmental violence at extractive sites, and this reality remains unaddressed. The Indigenous Environmental Network seeks to stress how Indigenous peoples, at the forefront of climate change and continue to survive in the face of environmental violence are the ones who bear the brunt of mining and fracking, combustion and experiments, geoengineering experiments with Mother Earth's blood and bones. The violence of extractivism continues due to the distraction and the deception of false solutions that block climate change mitigation from phasing out fossil fuels and other extractive energies. Compared to 2020 data by the World Bank, the World Bank estimates that a record 60% increase in global carbon pricing revenue was upwards of $86 billion was made in 1 year, in 2021. Voluntary carbon markets continued to balloon and increase reshaping incentives for carbon brokers and managers to pressure Indigenous peoples into offsetting their territories, resulting in more environmental and climate violence. Governments increasingly justify the revenue as a way to increase market-based mechanisms for broader policy objectives and to restore depleted public finances, while ignoring how Indigenous peoples' territories are targeted and co-opted by this very misleading agenda.
and you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're listening to a panel titled Indigenous Peoples' Health and the Violence of False Solutions, held this past April 20th of 2023 at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. The panel is moderated by Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. And now back to the panel.
In order for the United Nations at this point to maintain any legitimacy, there must be a moratorium on these false solutions that distract us from the real work of phasing out fossil fuels at source. This begins by completely ending Article 6 of the Paris Agreement and a moratorium on all voluntary carbon markets. We do not have time to tinker with a flawed system that has failed for over two decades, and we know that it has failed because otherwise climate change would have been addressed. The only option we have now is to follow the lead of Indigenous peoples and to phase out fossil fuels at source. So I end with these words, but I end them with a question. Power, geopolitical positioning, influence, legitimacy, misdirected, cognitive dissidence, climate change, United Nations, the time is up. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Tamara, for presenting that overview of the contradictions that we are always being presented at these climate negotiations of the UN, of the Framework Convention on Climate Change. And we have been there many years with Indigenous peoples calling into question the reporting and the monitoring systems that don't add up, and looking at the investments around carbon markets, carbon offsets, the 30 by 30 initiative that appear to look good with images of nature. So our next speaker has traveled here from Brazil, from the Amazon. And I'm very honored to introduce Sarah Linney, Oliveira da Silva. And she's from the Hunaquai peoples. And their leader, Chief Ninawa, has been coming to our gatherings for many years, and I remember their leadership. Chief Ninawa has pointed out that when the United Nations talks about recognition of the traditional indigenous knowledge, they have no understanding what that means. Especially the depth and the in the spirituality and the concepts of the cosmovision, the cosmology, and for our experience here in the north, the view from the shore when the settlers and the colonizers first came here, the biggest difference in that we recognize is that we weren't able to communicate with each other because we looked at life differently. And that still continues to this day, that they have developed these mechanisms of a market system that is being used as a greenwash, as a cover for false fossil fuel industry to continue to pollute. So, Sarah Linney has come here because they have firsthand experience rejecting the reduction of emissions from deforestation and degradation, and she's going to speak about that. So, Sarah Linney, if you can present. Thank you.
Buenas noches.
Good evening.
Me llamo...
I am Shirlene Oliveira da Silva, Hunikui. I speak a little bit of Spanish. I bring the voice of the people of the Amazon rainforest in Acre, Brazil, We have felt the pollution in our lands and waters, our forests, etc. Our forests have changed their natural cycles. And indigenous peoples are not responsible for these changes. We are not responsible for climate change. However, we feel all the changes of nature. We live in harmony with our most sacred good, our Mother Earth. We remove from the forests only what is essential for us, for our survival, and that of our families. And we don't leave any impact, and we don't leave any devastation behind. The solutions discussed by international cooperation do not reach the peoples of the Amazon. The principle of free, prior, and informed consent is not being respected. Indigenous peoples are not being informed of everything that is discussed at the forum or at the COP. And these are changes that affect directly our territories. Indigenous peoples represent less than 10% of the world's population. However, indigenous peoples preserve more than 80% of our planet. All these reasons and raising our voices has cost the lives of our leaders, our women, and has affected the lives of our youth and children. They took away our rights, and now they want to take away our most precious asset, our forests, where we have lived in harmony for thousands of years. Traditional populations are not benefiting from carbon trading resources. And the policies that have been established by the representatives are not accessible to all forest protectors in the Amazon region of Brazil. We have no access to resources, and we have no access to our territories either, and they are being invaded by the logging industry, the oil and gas industries, etc. Our lands, our bodies, our traditions, our sacred medicine, our water, our forests, and now the lives of our elders and our children are at risk. We are not interested in a carbon market. For us, this is a sacred good that is priceless, and it determines the whole of our existence. Our children are being killed in the most, in the cruelest form imaginable because of contamination with mercury in the water, in the fish. We go, are here now, and we are crying out for help so that our people can also be consulted about what is happening with the carbon market strategies. We have seen our non-contact relatives searching for our homes while they are killed, and they are asking for help because their traditional territories have also been invaded. Our brothers have been isolated for a long time, and they are also being affected by this lack of consent in their territories. They are not being informed ahead of time. What they are seeing is the trade of carbon credits. We have resisted for thousands of years, and we will continue to do it. We will continue to conserve our forests and their sacred spirits in the traditional way that our elders taught us. They taught us with all the sacred teachings, and not with all these false solutions that are presented today and that are not efficient for the protection of our traditions, identities, and customs. Hashi hash. Thank you.
And that was the first half of the panel titled Indigenous People's Health and the Violence of False Solutions, held on April 20th of 2023 at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the 22nd session. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're going to take a short break and come back with the second part of the panel. And that was the brand new song, The Navigator, by Howard Lyons, here on American Indian Airwaves. In the second half of our show today, we go back to the panel, Indigenous People's Health and the Violence of False Solutions, which took place on April 20th of 2023 at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the 22nd session. The panel focuses on Indigenous peoples resisting land grabs driven by the resource extractive industries, fighting against human rights violations, and Indigenous environmental defenders resisting false solutions known as carbon markets, cap and trade, emission trading, carbon offsets, environmental and ecological services, and the rebranding of reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, also known by the acronym RED, to the nation-based solutions. The panel was sponsored and organized by the Indigenous Environmental Network, and the panel is moderated by Tom Goldtooth, the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. And in the second half of today's program, we will hear from Thomas Joseph from the Hopa Nation in Northern California, as well as Alberto Saldabando. And now, Indigenous People's Health and the Violence of False Solutions, here on American Indian Airwaves.
From Brazil, the Global South, which we have found to be many of the initiatives that we are talking about of these market systems coming into the Amazon and the tropical forests. But also for those folks who live in the north, in the United States or Canada, we have saw the escalation of carbon offset mechanisms such as what has been implemented in the state of California. A number of years ago, there was legislation that created four provisions of carbon offsets that were brought into their cap and trade program. Most of those provisions established mechanisms for the trading of carbon, like, for an example, the state of Mexico, Indonesia, Ecuador. And so there was an international link from the domestic policies coming out of the United States. We saw a lot of the investors and a lot of U.S.-based non-governmental organizations, conservation organizations that were behind the development of these carbon offset regimes coming out of California and their program. So our next speaker comes from California. He's our carbon pricing educator for the Indigenous Environmental Network. He comes from the local community, and he said, you know, this is happening to my community, my people, and what could he do to help be part of a campaign of educating Indigenous peoples and local communities, people that are also impacted from these failed programs that are still being implemented. So coming from that California perspective and being an Indigenous person, I introduce Thomas Joseph from the Hoopa Nation. Thomas.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for the sisters before me that have spoken. I'd like to recognize the land of the Lenape people that we currently are residing on. My name is Thomas Joseph. I'm a Hoopa Valley tribal member. He, him are my pronouns. And we are located in the Six Rivers National Forest of Northern California, what's now called Northern California, which is near the Redwood Forest. Our people have called that region our home since time immemorial, which predates any structure of university systems today, that our knowledge-based structure is older and we have a direct concept of understanding the importance of a reciprocal relationship with our Mother Earth and with our forest, and we are a forest-dwelling tribe. And as we currently reside inside of these colonial states of California, we also understand that this violence that is caused from these forest offset projects, from these carbon markets, we also hold a great responsibility to that as the fourth largest economy of the world, that this responsibility weighs heavy upon the people of California to really move us in a direction that's going to cause real climate solutions to move forward. And as we continue to focus on these false solutions of carbon markets, that it doesn't give any room or space for real solutions to move forward. The Hoopa Valley people is one of the last tribes of the lower 48 states to be in contact with white settlers, that we are actually in contact with Chinese miners before white settlers. And then we've seen the onslaught of the 49er gold rush and the devastation that these miners caused and the violence that was created from their greed and from their hunger. We've seen our rivers destroyed and polluted. We've seen the biodiversity of our region greatly affected by this greed and by this hunger for power, this desire to gain power and control over others, over land, over resources. And we see that happening again today with these forest offset projects. We are the largest land-based tribe in the state of California, so our land is very enticing to the corporate elites seek our lands for their forest offset projects. And as we understand the history of the United States, of their violence against indigenous peoples, through the boarding school era, through the Indian Relocation Act. When the Indian Relocation Act was moving forward, we seen them come into our communities and strip our mothers and our fathers and our brothers and our sisters and our cousins to be moved into these large cities as a labor force. And as they moved into these large cities, they were finding refuge and home with other people of color near infrastructure sites of oil refineries and factories. And understanding and keeping connected to their families that still lived on the reservation, we then got to experience the devastation of their health, as they were more likely to have cancer, that they were more likely to have asthma. And because of their relocation into these inner cities, their life expectancy was shorter than the rest of the counterparts throughout the state. And then we see how these corporations come into our lands and they study our constitution for the purpose of undermining our rights as indigenous peoples, so that they can undermine our constitution to push forth measures to bribe our communities into signing these carbon market contracts, which are 99 years, which is nothing more than the further continuation of colonialism, to allow these corporations to have access to unceded indigenous lands is nothing indifferent than Western expansion, that it's manifest destiny repeating itself. And as indigenous people choose to engage in these type of contracts, that they're choosing to continue this plague of colonialism upon my sister's community in the global south, that they too, when they sign these contracts, are then denied access to those ancestral territories for traditional foods and medicines, that they too are not able to continue their reciprocal relationship with this forest because they are denied access. We have seen these carbon brokers come into our community and hire community members to do their bidding for them. We have seen them bribe our community members to uplift their agenda for the sole purpose of profitable gain. And to me, that's nothing different than the 49er gold rush that came before them. That this type of violence is not only a detriment to the indigenous peoples of California, it is a detriment to the humanity of all of us. That as we move forward in a measure that allows us to offset the release of carbon emissions, that we are going to continue business as usual, will continue to plague not only the state of California, but the rest of humanity itself. These forest offset projects in the state of California have failed. That our air quality in California is no better than it was before these carbon markets were implemented. That these forest offsets of the state of California continue to threaten the biodiversities of our region. This year was the first year in over a decade where we were able to finally see ample amount of water to try to revive the courageous drought that we've been in for about 10 years. That this drought has dried up our forests to a level that it is now able to burn down complete cities, neighborhoods, that people are losing their lives because of this drought and these wildfires, because they have stricken our ability to manage our lands in a traditional manner, that they have stricken our ability to continue a relationship with our lands that is not only in the best interest of humanity, but also the biodiversities and the land itself. And so what we're asking for is an end to these colonial tactics of violence. What we're asking for is for us to understand that the continuation of carbon markets must come to an end. You can't offset the damage of one area by strickening the relationship of humans in another area. You know, when we have these carbon brokers that come into our community, they're seen as the 49er rush before them, and we must call it that. We understand as Western expansion was moving that they would have scouts and that they would bribe the communities, and that still continues on today. The indigenous knowledge systems of indigenous people, not only in the state of California but the globe, needs to move forward. That we need to understand that this access to this knowledge base is not for the benefit of just those indigenous communities, but it's for the benefit of all humanity. And now we know and we understand that indigenous people are paying the brunt price of climate change, and yet they are the ones that are least responsible for it because of the first commitments our indigenous people have made, that we still understand and know the importance of taking care of our space, the importance of taking care of the sacred. And so when we continue to experience the climate chaos that is starting to rage across this planet, that we must also understand that when we lose this indigenous knowledge system, then we lose the ability to address climate change at scale. Again, I want to thank Tom Goldtooth, IEN, and the team up here in this moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. As we know and what we've been talking about, there's many atrocities that are taking place, and what we are talking about isn't just dealing with the Americas, but it's a global initiative. We met some indigenous brothers and sisters here from Kenya, for an example, that are telling a similar story of the negative impacts of RED. So there's human rights implications here, violations of the inherent and collective rights of indigenous peoples. In many countries in the South, governments don't want to recognize the collective rights of indigenous peoples with the S on people, the collective rights. So it's a big issue, many debates around the human rights and whether there are safeguards that can be established. Our next speaker is Alberto Saldamando. He is a consul on human rights and climate change. He has attended many of the conferences of the parties of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. Alberto.
Thank you very much, Thelma. Just to show you the corruption within the UN itself, 600 fossil fuel lobbyists and related business enterprises were present at COP27. They were there to lobby their interests and the interests of the oil companies. Since 1992 and the adoption of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, for 30 years now, the industrial and rich states of the North have recognized that carbon pollution causes global warming. It's beyond any reasonable doubt. And for 30 years, they have failed even to curb it, if not eliminate it altogether. It really boggles the mind that what we hope would be the salvation of the human race is really in the hands of those that would destroy it. It's no secret that multinational development banks and the UN are colonial organizations whose work reproduces colonial legacies of inequality. The overarching logic and origin of these institutions, as well as the specific logic within projects under each climate fund, position the Global South, indigenous peoples, and frontline communities as ignorant and or helpless instead of recognizing indigenous peoples as critically important experts of lands, waters, needs, and communities. At best, projects consult or include local communities as one voice amidst a choir of competing and powerful stakeholders, but do not ultimately share any decision-making power or direct funds, undermining efforts for sovereignty or self-determination. Moreover, traditional knowledge is either completely ignored and dismissed or picked over for bits that can be co-opted and incorporated into greenwashing projects. The relationship here is still one of extraction. Climate institutions and banks choose projects based on their ability to generate profit and maximize private sector involvement. Climate change is simply treated as the newest area for financial expansion and gain, once again entrenching the dynamic of global north exploitation under the guise of helping the global south. It is this history repeating itself. It is the same development paradigm that contributed to the climate crisis in the first place, this time even with less accountability, but a greener image. Crucially, these funds and the larger financial institutions financialize climate change, but do nothing to address the root cause of climate change. They do not reduce emissions or keep fossil fuels in the ground. Further, these projects are not regulated or standardized under the UNFCCC, and there is no accountability mechanism led by indigenous peoples and local communities to ensure that projects in fact address climate change. New financing facilities and climate finance do not offer new solutions. They offer false solutions. They just funnel money into more of the same false solutions that have been peddled for years. The solutions pushed under the UNFCCC are false solutions that actually perpetuate the climate crisis. That includes RES Plus, which really is, if you've been attending the sessions here, you recognize that many indigenous peoples consider REDS as a land grab, but they call it, the states call it a nature-based solution. Sustainable forest management, carbon trading, and climate-smart agriculture. These are the terms they use to push the financial, climate, and to create large climate funds within development and financial institutions, skirting around real solutions.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're listening to a panel titled Indigenous Peoples' Health and the Violence of False Solutions, held this past April 20th of 2023 at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. The panel is moderated by Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. And now back to the panel.
They distract us from the root cause of climate change and allow polluters to keep on polluting while Indigenous peoples continue to face the violent dispossession and cultural genocide of climate change. Financial institutions and fossil fuel companies greenwash their destruction so that they can continue business as usual, which is carbon pollution. Their desperation to and access to power has led to climate mitigation and adaptation focused almost entirely on market-based carbon trading systems. In order to create carbon, treat carbon as a commodity in a marketing trading system, it is necessary to put a value on carbon and claim property rights over all forms of life. Carbon traders have gained power to target and commodify Indigenous peoples' territories, putting a price on carbon sequestered in forest, soil, water, and biodiversity. It is part of the predatory instinct of the black snake, devastating the sacredness of Mother Earth and Father Sky. It disguises itself as respectful of Indigenous rights and traditional knowledge, but is an insidious form of capitalism and commodifies nature and Mother Earth and corrupts the sacred. Again, if you've been attending these sessions, you've been hearing the states telling us how much they care about Indigenous rights and how much they care about nature and Mother Earth, and they go back home and kill us and destroy the environment. With billions at stake for new carbon markets, development, and so-called nature-based solutions, carbon traders are targeting Indigenous peoples' territories all across the world. After 25 years of debate on carbon trading, offset profiteers have pocketed billions to programs like reducing emissions, deforestation, and forest degradation, which is Red Plus. These programs have eroded Indigenous people's sovereignty and done nothing to reduce carbon in the atmosphere. Forest offset management companies target Indigenous territories because they are the most biodiverse places on the planet. Their offsetting projects are hotly contested and sadly have caused violence and division among Indigenous peoples. As a result, the private sector did what they always do when challenged. They rebrand. Under the new language of nature-based solutions, forest, soil, and ocean-based offsets are often disguised to fool the public to believing that they are positive solutions to climate change. As of 2021, 92% of countries' nationally determined contributions to meet emissions reductions under the UNFCCC include some form of nature-based solutions. In other words, the majority of the world lives under the delusion that they can fix climate change without giving up fossil fuels. Hundreds of billions of dollars have flowed into the fossil fuel companies systematically polluting the planet. These financial numbers can seem quite abstract, but impacts are anything but abstract for the millions of people who live on the front lines of the extraction process, processing, and transportation of fossil fuels. The Indigenous Environmental Network spotlights the struggles of peoples and communities opposing fossil fuels on the ground and include those voices to make it clear that bank financing for fossil fuels concretely impacts the everyday lives of people worldwide. Climate change hits the frontline communities first and worst. People living in the front lines of climate chaos are predominantly Indigenous peoples, black and brown communities, low-wage workers, or smallholder farmers, often living in poverty. Sometimes, as in the case of Nigeria and U.S. Gulf Coast, both featured in the Banking on Climate Change report, identifying the worst banks who have invested $3 trillion since Paris into fossil fuel production. They're the same people living with worsening hurricanes, stronger storm surges, rising sea levels, and the lasting effects of racial injustice and inequality are also part of the epicenter of the massive, dirty, health-harming fossil fuel industry. Leaders in these communities oppose our current system of extraction. In conclusion, to address climate policy inequality, strategies for climate change should foreground and center Indigenous people's sovereignty and jurisprudence, territorial rights, demarcation of ancestral lands, traditional Indigenous knowledge, debt cancellation of the vulnerable states, and keeping it in the ground, and true reparations for Indigenous peoples and local communities. Ombatakwiyas, and thank you.
Thank you, Alberto. So thank you for asking me to be a moderator for this very important topic. I'm going to share a couple of teachings that I've received about 1969, 2000, as I started to get involved with climate policy, both domestically in the United States here and globally. As we went into 2001, 2002, and 3 and 4, the debates and discussion around these issues of carbon sinks in the forest, going from red with 1D to 2Ds, and then eventually expanding the mechanisms into the broad area of conservation. And you see red plus with the little plus sign, and there's even humor with plus, plus, and plus as the red initiative continues to be expanded. And like I said, the new branding mechanisms that I've seen, like nature-based solutions that was all over the place a couple of years ago at the Conference of the Parties in Madrid. But one of the things that I, as an individual, had to do in the early years around this phenomenon of a terminology of carbon trading and emissions trading is to ask the question, what is it that they are trading? And trying to understand upbringing carbon, methane, other greenhouse gases, but primarily carbon into a market trading system and treating it as a commodity is something that I really have to look at. How is it that dominant society is now bringing the elements of the sacred from an indigenous perspective, from the atmosphere, the air that we breathe, into a market system? And what was really critical for me as I looked at this is that when you treat an element, when you treat the carbon and bring it into a market system, you have to determine whose property right that is. It's a property right issue. And that's why we use the terminology in our literature that it's a form of privatization and commodification of the sacred. So right away, like I said at the beginning, is there's two cosmologies that we are operating under basically throughout the world. The indigenous cosmology and our relationship to the sacredness of Mother Earth and Father Sky, and in our relationship to the cosmos and to the universe. Here in the United States, during those years of colonization, conquest, the takings of our land, the colonizers never asked us what our genesis was. What is our understanding in life, our spirituality? But you find that as we look at the world is very sacred. The elements of nature are very sacred. So the concept of bringing nature, bringing carbon into a white man market system and treating it as a commodity and determining who has legal rights to that is a foreign concept and a corruption of the sacred. So that's fundamental to us in our resistance, to what we are talking about. So there's a big question of debate that indigenous peoples globally are asking themselves. Do you take part in a market system? Do you take part in nature, these projects, Project Nature Solution projects? And what is it that we have to reconcile to participate in these foreign concepts? Usually, we're seeing the polluters, the investors, the World Bank, large NGOs and governments, and especially the corporations participating aggressively coming into our communities, pushing initiatives, knowing that poverty is extreme. And many of our indigenous peoples want to look at how can they bring their people out of poverty. And it is a co-optation process that is not ethical. It's wrong. Some of our traditional spiritual leaders in the North here, when they look at this, they call it an evil manifestation of man, of humanity. When we look back at the Paris Agreement in 2015, we said this is going, we looked at this Paris Agreement basically as a trade instrument. That was something that Alberto Salamondo said. It's a trade instrument, nothing else. It did not establish any legally binding global initiative for nation states of the world to reduce their emissions. If there was any language, it was on a voluntary level. So what is this picture that we're talking about, that we're dealing with a global matrix system that has no value of recognition of what you have heard in the hallways and in the meetings of this permanent forum on indigenous rights? How much does the...
Hello, this is Daffodil. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Got troubles. I got them too.
Friday, May 5th, is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. It's a day that calls for justice for those mothers, daughters, and sisters that go missing from Indigenous communities and reservations. Tune in to KBOO Friday, May 5th at 6 p.m. for special programming on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Day, produced by KBOO's Carmen Garnica.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio.
Listen, my friends, as I tell you...